Welcome to our new show, the What Anyone Can Do podcast with Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Our new show picks up where the last show, Year of the Peer, left off, highlighting the simple truth that who you surround yourself with matters, and that if we enlist the support of others, give back to those who give to us, and pay it forward for the next generation, we can do anything. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari and I will interview a diverse group of thought leaders who will share stories and insights that will help you succeed in business and in life. How? By doing the things anyone can do, but most of us never will. Welcome to another episode of What Anyone Can Do, the podcast. My name is Randy Cantrell. Right now he's in the Stanley Cup Finals. His team is. He is Boston's own Leo Battari. Congrats, man.
Yes. Kind of blew away the Hurricanes last night, as I like to say.
Man, sweet. 4-0. Sweep.
A lot of talk about how tough Carolina was going to be to beat at home. And certainly they had their periods where they were pretty dominant. But, you know, as we saw, the Bruins goaltender is just in a whole other zone right now. You know, we were talking about the recent Geico commercials with Duncan the Walrus. You know, I feel like it must be like Tuukka Rask, brother Duncan. You know, I mean, it must be what it feels like for a team to have someone covering the net to a point where it just is completely impossible to score. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's been a cool thing to watch. And
They sucked all the life out of the Hurricanes, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's been an interesting season. Certainly, you know, the Bruins didn't have the best record by any stretch during the regular season. But as we all know, you get into playoff time and it's just kind of who has it together and who's prepared, you know, really well, and who's put themselves in a position in the playoffs to be the hot team and playing good hockey. I think you and I have talked about it in the past in basketball. You look at what Tom Izzo does at Michigan State. You don't see that team going undefeated or anything even close to that during the season. And yet all of a sudden they're going deep into the tournament, like all the time. And it's like, what is that about? You know? But I think there's a little bit of this idea. I think we talked about that teams that don't make winning the goal, but they simply see it as the reward. And they set their goals differently. They set their goals in terms of getting better every day, those incremental improvements, those things that they want to just get better at, so that when it comes time for an NCAA tournament or a Stanley Cup Finals, you know, you are hopefully have set your team up to be playing the very best they've been playing all year long. And, you know, and I think for teams, as they think about that in general, whether it's in business or in sports, you know, think about, you know, where, you know, how to get your team ready for the task at hand to make sure that they are, you know, playing at their very best. So it's been a really cool thing to watch. Obviously, the Bruins are going to get some rest now, which is kind of nice. They get to sit back a little bit and watch. I think tonight you've got, San Jose and St. Louis. San Jose up 2-1 in the series. But if that series goes a bit, it's going to let Boston kind of recover a bit, I think. And
yeah, and St. Louis is arguing that it shouldn't be that because of the goal, the hand pass and what.
Oh, yeah.
But it does speak to today's topic that we kind of wanted to address of stepping up, kind of step two of what makes a really effective group. But before that, update us, because you've just got back. You just came in last night from a road trip doing some workshops in the Southeast. And
I did. Columbia, South Carolina, and Augusta, Georgia. In fact, on Instagram, I showed where I was at the Augusta Country Club. Now, this is the private country club, which is amazing in its own right. But it also has the kind of unique position of literally being adjacent to Augusta National. So this would be the best country club anywhere if it weren't right there. But I think in its own right is it was.
And you were sans the golf clubs, no golf clubs,
which I was really bummed about. But I was assured because I was told that they really want to invite me back, and I'm like, all right, The deal is, however, you know, I want to be, we're bringing the sticks next time because I'd like to be playing. Because at Augusta Country Club was magnificent, beautiful, beautiful place. And, you know, the staff there and everything couldn't have been more, you know, lovely in terms of people to work with there. And I was in Columbia the day before. And, yeah, just working with, you know, a couple of both CEO peer groups. And, you know, it was just... it's really, really good. It's always a learning experience. And at the same time, you know, it all comes down to, you know, what kind of we're talking about today and what's kind of the second step of things. We basically said, look, if you want to be a good member and really be a contributor to a high performing group, it's about showing up, stepping up and following up. And so I do, you know, before we get into, maybe at the end, we'll talk about some of the other things, you know, get going on going forward, which would be great. But definitely like to dive into, you know, this idea that showing up is critical, right? I mean, you know, when we talk about the five factors that are so important to every high performing peer group, which is, just to review briefly, having the right people in the room, having a safe and confidential environment, having really valuable interaction that provides the kind of outcomes that really make these meetings worthwhile, to have a culture of accountability, and that's accountability of one member to the other. And then, of course, having a level of servant leadership where the group becomes the real focus and where that leader becomes the steward of the other four factors, making sure that those things are never taken for granted. And they're always you know, important. But, you know, it's so interesting as you go and look at groups and this whole idea of showing up. While it seems like, well, of course you need to show up, but sometimes, you know, a meeting can come along and you've got a lot on your plate at the office and you're thinking, ah, I've got to miss that meeting this time because I've got too much on my plate here. And, you know, someone told me one time that they said, you know, whenever I get into those moments, I think about the fact that whenever I skip my meeting, I always regret it. And when I go, I never regret it. And I think it's this kind of reminder of not only the value that you get from participating in that peer group experience, but the real important idea that you're of real value to everyone else in that room. And when you're not in that room, there's really something missing. And when we consider those five factors and really ramping those up so that you can have your group firing on all cylinders, if you can't be there consistently, you're just never going to make that happen. You know, we kind of talked about, you know, if practice for the Bruins, for example, were optional, you know, right, it's not likely that that team would be, and that had been that way all season, unless all of the players, you know, handled that very differently. It's not likely they would be, right, you know, in a Stanley Cup finals, but, you know, showing up is only a part of it. You know, you've got to physically be there. There's no question about that. But I think, stepping up is kind of really where the rubber meets the road. It's where it's the difference between attendance and showing up and real commitment. And so one of the things that has come up, and of course there's a lot of ways to step up, but one of the things that has come up is simply one of preparedness. I talk to more groups where, and this is even CEOs who come to these groups, who will say to me and admit that this is the least prepared they show up to any meeting on their calendar. And it's kind of astonishing. And then they look and they're kind of sheepish about it, you know, when they kind of admit right. it. But they say they would never think to come to a meeting with their employees, a meeting with their board, a meeting with anyone as ill-prepared as they are oftentimes they step into the peer group meeting because they feel like, hey, they're just bringing themselves. They can dial it in. They're meeting with a bunch of, you know, folks in the same position. But yet, you know, I say to them, imagine if everyone showed up all the time. And imagine if you all spent 15 minutes preparing for the meeting. And I use the term, and I use this time frame of 15 minutes because I've never had a CEO who is noticeably better prepared than all of the other people in the room say that it took them more than 15 minutes in order to do that. So, you know, it's just really interesting. You can imagine that if you as an individual member took 15 minutes and then everyone else in the room did the same thing, what a game-changing event that would be, just by doing that if you did nothing else?
Well, the Bruins, you know, to make the tie-in, they understand the magnitude of the stage. And you and I have had some conversations. Surely we've recorded. I know we've had some conversations offline about a leader and the awareness that eyes are on you. You kind of have to know that you've got to show up in that regard, and that you have to worry about your influence and how other people see you in the company. But in these CEO groups, don't you think the same thing is in play? I mean, here you are with peers who you can provide great value for. They can bring you great value. I mean, it's a pretty big stage. It's a pretty important stage that you don't have anywhere else in your life. Yeah, I mean, the Bruins are in the Stanley Cup playoff, and a pro hockey player, the star players who never make it, you know, understand the importance of it. So those guys understand the compelling reason to step up their game, and it is a different game. It is, I suppose, in every sport, you know, the playoffs are their own season, but to step up to the magnitude or the size of the stage, is there any play in that at all?
Totally. I think when, first of all, when you go, I don't care who's running the group. Let's say you have an organization running a group or whatever it happens to be, and you may be paying dues to that group, right? Or the organizing body, right? For this.
Right.
It's not as if you participate in that with the hope that you sit in the chair and it's like, entertain me. You know, it's like, you're a player in it. You contribute to the team. It's not just what's on your jersey or anything. Like, you and the Bruins, you and UConn women's basketball, you and the New England Patriots or the Dallas Cowboys or whatever, that is you.
Yeah, you're on the roster.
You're on the roster, right? You're doing that. But I do think that this idea of how people contribute to making it a can't miss experience, I think, is essential. And this drives the showing up piece too, right? Because if actually everyone's showing up prepared and bringing their A games, it's going to drive people showing up, because you're getting so much value from all that intellectual capital and all that horsepower, all playing at a high level, that you're thinking, wow, you know, and because you never have access to that typically, it's not likely that you would want to miss that event. It does remind me of the story we talked about where Gina Auriemma at the beginning of a season for UConn women's basketball might take the players out to a Broadway play. And so they're out at the play, they watch it, or it's a musical or whatever, and they come back the following morning. And whenever they meet for practice, they'll start practice by saying, hey, what'd you guys all think of the performance last night? Of course, they're all blown away by like how amazing it all was. And he said, well, you know that they did that the night before that, right? And the night before that, and on Wednesdays and Saturdays, they do it twice a day. So he was reminding them that the audience is only going to likely see that performance that one time. And because all of the performers understand that, they have to deliver that performance as if it's the only time they're ever going to do it. And they bring that level of commitment and passion, and they bring their A games, and they do it every single night. And that's why we walk out of a theater feeling the way we do. So in relating it to the players, he basically said, you know, we're in a situation in this program right now that there's oftentimes not a lot of suspense regarding whether we're going to win the game. But for that arena full of people who spend money to come watch us, I want them walking out of there that night feeling like, wow, I just saw something special. I just saw something that I didn't expect in terms of the way they play together and how they play the game, not whether they won or not. Right. And so, you know, those kinds of things, if we start thinking about how we show up in that way, like how often do we show up as if we are a performer in a Broadway play, right? How often are we bringing our gay games? And maybe it's unrealistic to suggest that any of us could ever do that 24 hours a day. But I do think we can ask it of ourselves to do it for certain events, if you will. And I think those meetings become events that are about an investment that not only you're making of time and arguably money, depending on the group you're part of, but also that everyone else is bringing, and that you owe it to everyone else in that room to step up and bring the very best you have in order to make that group experience as worthwhile as humanly possible.
We can all, I think, readily envision what the bad would look like when people show up and they're apathetic and they're unprepared. And, you know, it doesn't take much imagination to figure that. But from your experience, when you witness an ideal or whatever you have witnessed so far that is as close to an ideal, what does that look like? And what suggestions can we make to the audience for preparation?
Well, a couple of things, really. One is a real ideal dynamic. You know, there may be five factors, but I think the yin and yang that exists in the middle there is this idea of safe and confidential environment and fostering valuable interaction and really being productive. Having a safe and confidential environment means that I can be completely open with this group, that I could bring virtually any issue to the table, business or personal, especially if personal is affecting, you know, how I'm doing my work. And trust, of course, that from a confidentiality standpoint, what happens in the room stays in the room, that it is truly sacrosanct. When you have that, that starts to free up everything with regard to the quality of the conversation that you can have and some of the outcomes that can be driven, right? So now you get into the side of fostering valuable interaction, where you can't have valuable interaction unless you have something to valuably interact about, that is valuable to interact about. And right, that's not going to happen unless you've got a room where people trust one another. Now, once people bring those big issues to the table, they start modeling behaviors, both in the terms of how they prepare and present those issues, but also how people listen and receive those issues. Now it drives up the trust factor, right? So these things start to really work together in a very powerful way. And when you have that going on, and I think only when you have that going on, can you actually ever create a culture where there's real mutual accountability for how people show up all the time, you know, because you're never going to feel comfortable challenging someone, even if you are challenging them on doing something they have said they want for themselves, which is typically the situation. You're not shooting people, as we've talked about before. You're not their consultant. All you're doing is trying to present experiences and ideas and thoughts, find out what resonates with them, and then they'll basically tell you, here's kind of what's in my head, here's what I can commit to and what I want to do, where now they own that solution. So getting there, if you think about it, is not particularly easy, and it's a real process where, you know, people go back and forth, and where I think this idea of valuable interaction and safe and confidential environment truly work as a yin and yang, where one drives the other to be better. And I think when groups have that going really, really well, and they make sure they never take it for granted, and they keep that at the forefront, and they're constantly working at it and pushing each other to get better, I think that's where the real magic can happen with these groups.
Well, and whether you're talking about UConn women's basketball or the Boston Bruins, you know, it's remarkable to me through these playoffs, and of course my Dallas Stars got eliminated, but it was a great year for them anyway. This is a team that's had three coaches over the last 5 years, so they've had a lot of turmoil. So,
well, and having a
good year for them.
Oh, no doubt. And you know, fresh off of coming back from Columbia, South Carolina, as you might imagine, I got my fill of the Clemson culture, right? Yeah. Dabo Sweeney and what they've created there, exactly, at Clemson. And you get a sense that, you know, a lot of teams, whether it's in college football, college basketball, they'll have a great season because there's just kind of something that happens in that season. They get the right group of players and it just happens, but then they go away. Yeah. I think obviously the feel when you look at Clemson and their program is that this is a culture that is strong and positive and deep, right, and something that's here to stay, you know,
right,
assuming that they can kind of continue doing what they're doing and the way they're doing it. And they talk about this concept with Dabo Sweeney about just being all in, you know, and that really kind of says it. When we talk about stepping up, we're really talking about being all in, you know, bringing your complete self in that committed way so that in that day, half day, however long your group meeting happens to be, that if I commit to showing up to being the very best member I can be. And I set that example. It will drive others to do the same. We're going to help each other keep getting better all the time. And again, we're going to create that can't miss experience that's going to drive people showing up, right? It all most certainly works together.
Well, you said the word that, and to me, every time we talk about this or I think about it, and when I even go back and kind of revisit the book, The Power of Peers, the trust is just, I mean, there's the linchpin to the whole thing. Because if you watch these sports like hockey or basketball where multiple players touch the element, the ball or the puck, all you got to do is watch the Bruins and watch the passing. All you got to do is watch the UConn women's and watch the passing. They trust each other. Else they're not going to let go of the ball. And you see those teams where one guy's trying to carry the puck through multiple defenders. He's not going to pass the puck. He's trying to do too much all by himself. It just jumps out like a sore thumb for those of us that watch the sport regularly. And it's like, there's no way that's going to work. It's not going to work.
No. The trust factor is huge. I mean, it's everything. And when I meet with groups who, here's the thing. One of the questions that I'll ask when we think about have them assess their environment, right? And they assess themselves. This isn't me doing it. They think about, okay, is this environment a safe place? In almost all cases, quite frankly, they'll be yes. Yeah, if we were to rank in a scale of 1 to 10, we're at about a 9.5. And so that's great. Except then when you dig a little deeper, you find out, well, how well do you think you use that old 9.5 safe environment you got there? Well, maybe about a 6 because, it's safe. I'm just not there yet
in terms right. of
how I'm going to participate in that environment, how I'm going to show up in it. And, what can tend to happen is some people will be very open, other people not. And unless everyone over time starts to at least start to play and contribute there, you can start having resentment that takes place with the people who are sharing all the time versus the people who they perceive to be holding back. And so what is that about and why is that not working? And it's part of its modeling behaviors, like I talked about, both in terms of preparation and presentation and then, how we listen. But the other is also, when everyone shows up all the time, what does that mean? Now you see them at least once a month, if not, between meetings, which would be ideal if you also saw meeting people in between. But the more you get to know one another, not just in terms of job title and industry and, what some of your mindset and industry expertise may be, but to actually get to know you as a human being and where you grew up and things about your family and if you have a dog or what your favorite song is, now that starts to create an entirely different dynamic among the group where it really does break down barriers and people do realize that, they are kind of very much in the same boat, that they all have, their life isn't perfect. It's not the highlight reel that right. everyone typically shows everyone on social media all the time, that there's stuff going on behind the scenes, that it's a unique opportunity to actually sit down with a group of people who understand that, to be able to bring that to the forefront, have honest conversations. But to do that is very much, it's a real effort. And it's an effort around that table for everybody there. So this idea of stepping up while, it seems like, oh yeah, I'm just going to go and I'm be engaged and bring my A game. That's great. But then there's things behind that in terms of real actions and things that force people out of their comfort zone, particularly when it comes to raising certain issues.
Right.
In fact, what's really funny is that you'll have, in the case of CEO groups I've been involved with, I would say for most of the groups I talk to, you'll have a CEO will be far more likely to talk about a very personal situation in their family. Could be their relationship with their spouse, could be something with their kids, could be anything. And deep stuff that is really great turmoil going on in their family. But ask that same CEO to say, hey, there's something I can't handle in my company. that speaks to kind of their competence or efficacy as a CEO? Not so much. I mean, then it becomes a little tougher play. So when people can start having all of those conversations and really can trust one another and know, you know, again, what happens in the room stays in the room, and that every single person in that room is also struggling with something. If it isn't the same thing that you're struggling with, which is often the case, you'll find three or four people saying, yep, got it, I'm there too. Or it's something else. And that's how you help one another. And once people let go of that, I think it's a unique form to be able to do it. But it's not a given. Just because the environment's safe, the people will actually use it. So stepping up can be a real challenge for everyone involved. But when people do, and when they give over to the power of the group and the wisdom of the group over any individual, there's some amazing things that happen.
Well, it certainly is counter to culture. And as long as you've been doing this, you have seen the cultural shift just sparked largely by social media of best foot forward. And you've probably seen it. I'm sure that many people in our audience have seen it. It's funny to me, these photographs that, you know, of how an Instagram photograph was taken, you know, and there'll be all this contrivance behind the scenes where they go back and they take, and that, to me, that's kind of a perfect metaphor for this stepping up and not confusing it with showing up. But, you know, that's what we want. We want to front. We would prefer to front. The problem is there's no value there. There's just no value in pretending and not facing it. But again, it's why the trust, I think, is super critical. It matters who's in the room, for sure.
Yeah, no, it certainly does. But and one of the things you kind of sparked for me is, we've talked a lot before about the Edelman Trust Barometer. Well, Edelman Trust Barometer, for those who aren't as familiar with it, of course, Edelman is a terrific global communications firm. You know, arguably the best in the world at what they do in terms of being, I think, PR centric, but at the same time, in terms of their roots and all, getting involved in, you know, a lot of other areas of helping multinational organizations, among others, communicate effectively with their audiences. But one of the important studies they do, among several, is the Edelman Trust Barometer, which is a study of trust in public and public trust in institutions. So that includes business, government, media, and NGOs, and or non-governmental organizations. And one of the things they did this time was, I think they took an even deeper dive when it came to the workplace. And largely because what we've seen, if you look at the beginning of what they've done with the Edelman Trust Barometer since it began in 2001, is they would move from, like, in 2003, where we wouldn't just believe advertisers. We got to see, like, some third-party corroboration. We got to look at Consumer Reports or New York Times article or something that gives us evidence that, oh yeah, this company that says that their product or service is the best out there, I want to hear it from someone else before I believe it. And by 2005, 2006, it wasn't just that they wanted to hear from Consumer Reports. They wanted to hear from people like you and me who read that book or drove that car or sent their kid to college, and depending on one another. But what's happened is, while the advent of social media has allowed us to access a lot of different, you know, ideas and opinions and you know, get access to people like us. On the other hand, trust in social media has waned in recent years, largely because of all the false info that's coming out and just all of the things that are out there. You call it fake news, call it whatever you want. And that it's now, we still trust our peers basically more than most others, other than maybe academic and technical experts. But we're looking to the people close to us. And those people closest to us are the people we work with. So we're looking at those relationships and those people that we're now starting to think about when it comes to trust. And Edelman, I think, did a terrific job with that. In fact, I'd really encourage people to look at the Edelman Trust Barometer. Look at there's a particular deck that talks about trust at work and the workforce. How they're looking to their CEO, not necessarily government, to address, you know, social needs and big issues, you know, as well as issues in the community. that people obviously do. Now, this isn't just millennials. This is everyone who wants to be part of something purposeful and something that's making a difference, and realizing that, hey, if the system isn't working, if we can't trust the institutions to do it, then maybe we as individuals and as organizations and companies need to take matters into our own hands from time to time and really play a role. Understanding, in the parlance of Angela Myers, is that we matter and that we can all, you know, contribute to making a real difference, because when you look at a lot of large social change around the world, that's where it's always started. I mean, that's where it comes from. So I think that kind of, you know, mindset and understanding, when we're looking at the shifts that have taken place from 2001 to today, and how you could argue that our peers and those people closest around us matter more than they ever have, I think that's something to really think about, and why both informally, as we talk about in What Anyone Can Do, why we can and how we should access the people around us, and why when we think about the power of peers, why maybe being part of a formal peer group in whatever form really suits your needs and whatever goals that you're looking to achieve in your life, you know, isn't really something everyone should really be paying attention to.
Well, the fact is, we all need to be more purposeful and intentional about the people that we surround ourselves with, for sure. Because, you know, some of us have got more toxic people in our lives than others. But yeah, there's plenty of help out there. That's kind of the shame of all of this. You know, the showing up and the stepping up, especially, is that we're without excuse. I really think that we are without excuse to put ourselves in a situation and be intentional and thoughtful about the people that we put in our lives, or that we allow in our lives, to help us, and for us to provide the help that maybe only we can provide for them.
Well, and, you know, part of, as you know, the premise of What Anyone Can Do, as Joe Henderson would explain, that most people are really successful, it isn't because they can leap tall buildings in a single bound. They can do the things anyone can do that most of us just never will. You know, they're the ones getting up and spending that time daily basis working on their craft or doing the kinds of things when other people won't. And you wonder, you know, it's so funny, isn't it, how we think so often when someone comes onto the scene as a star in their field, and whatever it may be, it could be business, sports, or whatever, and we look at it like, oh, they just burst onto the scene, where we don't get the window of the 10, 20 years it took of work behind that put them in that position. And are they any better, you know, if you think about it, than anyone else? Not really, but they put in the work and they earned the right to be doing what they're doing in almost every case. And you know, I think all of us have that power. You know, I tell a story in these group meetings about a woman who was asked a single question by another member that changed the trajectory of her entire company for decades to come. And, you know, you remind members that this isn't just, you know, some type of validation about collaboration. It's really a validation about what can happen when everyone steps up and really does bring their A game and is listening and prepared to ask those kind of questions that can change the trajectory of someone's life, or for them to do it for you. And that possibility exists each and every meeting that people come. And once they recognize that, and that they actually have that power, it's, again, really remarkable when you watch high-performing groups play at that level. And what it can mean, you know, for everybody. So
we'll put some links in the show notes for today for those of you that are listening to maybe even to some of the interview we did with Angela, you know,
absolutely,
a year or so ago, and some of this Edelman information. So if you want to find out more, we can put that. Well, before we close off, just tell us a little bit about what you got coming up in your life.
So, end of this month, heading to Ottawa, where I'll be visiting a couple of peer groups that actually reside inside companies, which I love to see that. I love to see companies who recognize the value of putting peer groups together, where, you know, I think they understand what they can do for one another in terms of both alignment and in terms of being able to implement things that they learn and have a mechanism for doing so, as opposed to what we've talked about many times where, you know, people can go and learn all this great stuff and they come back and then they have to go back and just catch up on all the stuff they've missed, and they get, you know, they get sucked back into their own responsibilities, and they just can't, you know, get that done. So a couple groups in Ottawa, as I mentioned, and we'll be speaking with, we'll have Jennifer Bessels on the show in a couple of weeks regarding the Executive Growth Alliance. And I'll be doing a keynote and doing some other things at a conference there in Oslo, Norway. And interestingly enough, actually just yesterday, I had some outreach to do some workshops in China that will likely happen in 2020. So kind of figuring that out in terms of the calendar and kind of obviously having to block out a pretty big chunk of time in order to do that. But, you know, The Power of Peers was translated into Spanish, but also into Chinese. And so there's some real interest and real kind of understanding of, and it's been an interesting culture shift, I think, for that country in terms of really being able to sit down and have the kind of conversations that we've been talking about today. Right. And so I'm going to be fascinated to learn more about where they are, the outcomes they want, and how I can take the work that I've been doing, you know, now with groups largely here in the U.S. Over there and see what we can do. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's excellent. The website again is leobattari.com. That's leobottari.com. Again, we'll put some links in today's show notes for those of you that are interested in finding out a little bit more. And I guess at this point, I'm going to have to just say go Bruins. You know,
there you go. You know, this
I'm going to have to root for your
team.
You
know that I would have done the same. Had this
And
we were out of it.
You know? It's the power of peers.
Yeah. We'll get you a hat maybe before
the
series.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to be tough to beat. They're going to be very, very tough to beat.
Well, we'll see what happens. I will, be wearing the hat, pretty much through the playoffs. So we'll see.
We've already got kind of the playoff beard a little bit.
Yeah, so. There you go.
Keep the hat.
All right. Well, you guys all have a great one. We'll talk to you next week.
To learn more about our show and what we do, to submit questions to us, and to subscribe to What Anyone Can Do podcast, please visit our website, whatanyonecando.com. What Anyone Can Do podcast is hosted by Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod is Vibe Ace, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks for watching or listening. We hope you'll share the podcast.